Welcome back to Let Me Read to You, a series of the Feel More podcast. Today I'm going to be reading a passage from the book The Path to Love by Deepak Chopra. I'll be reading pages 20 through 28 from the first chapter, Reviving a Love Story. There's somebody out there. I know what you're thinking, Delaney said. You think I'm too choosy, right? But I don't think I'm asking too much. It's not that she has to be drop-dead gorgeous or a PhD. You just have standards, I suggested. Right. I think of it as a package. If the whole package is right, the details don't matter all that much. Assuming that she, whoever she is, likes your package, I said. Delaney nodded. He was amazingly immune to irony, and I knew that wasn't fair for me to aim it at him. He really did want to fall in love. It was his biggest goal in life. And since Delaney had succeeded at all his other goals, it was frustrating how elusive this one was turning out to be. Once he and I had done a residency together in Boston, where he had been raised in a working-class family, and we later moonlighted at the same suburban emergency room to make ends meet. It had been 15 years since he set up his cardiology practice, and only now, in his mid-40s, did Delaney feel he could make time to find a mate. It was hard for him to hide how confused about it he was in his own mind. Thank God I'm not one of those guys who's dumping his wife of 30 years for a sexy 20-something girlfriend, he said. For me, this is a fresh start. I'm optimistic. I'm patient. But I guess... What? I asked. Delaney looked away, a faint cloud of doubt on his face. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too old, he muttered. Or too demanding, I said. Isn't a sexy 20-something part of the package you're looking for? Be honest. He shrugged sheepishly. A guy can hope. I felt a sudden uneasiness about Delaney and his newest project, immediately followed by a wave of sadness. The fact that our culture teaches us so little about love was staring me in the face. We had been talking about a man's love life for an hour, and yet we hadn't touched on anything even remotely resembling love. Have you ever fallen in love before? I asked. Really fallen? Delaney looked startled, apparently not expecting our conversation to get this personal. He hesitated. Well, I'm not coming from nowhere on this thing, he said. I've had some really sweet times, and lots of women want to go out with me. I nodded. Listen, we don't have to go anywhere you don't want to go, I said quietly, but I think you're feeling a little lost. He stiffened, and I could see him retreat inwardly. I said, that wasn't an accusation. It's natural to feel lost, especially if you're not looking in the right places. I hate the places where I go, he said angrily. The bars? Everyone hates those places, I said. But that's not what I meant. You're not looking in yourself. That's the place where she is, whoever you hope to find. Delaney stared at me as if I was indulging a paradox, but I pressed on. You've had a lot of accomplishment in your life, and basically you've used the same approach every time. You see a challenge, you muster your resources, and with enough confidence and self-assurance, you win what you're after. That's right, isn't it? He agreed. Accomplishing anything important involves risk, I said, and therefore fear. But if you let the fear dominate, you'd never take any risks, and therefore you wouldn't accomplish anything. Are you saying I'm afraid to fall in love? He asked. Then why would I be looking for it? No, I'm not saying that, I replied. But love and fear very often touch, and people like you who have undertaken very difficult things, going to medical school on a shoestring, opening your own practice, raising money for expansion and new ventures, have to learn to keep fear out of the picture. And not just fear. Self-doubt, confusion, despair, hopelessness, most of the common human frailties, in fact. Keeping your frailties out of sight become extremely important if you want to amount to anything in this world. But that is exactly the opposite of what love demands. Delaney flinched. I could tell he didn't like the word demand. I have weaknesses, like everybody else, he said begrudgingly. What do you want me to do? Go around parading how vulnerable I am so that some woman will take pity on me? You're exaggerating because you hate the idea so much, I said. No, you aren't out to attract pity. What I'm trying to get at is that normal life requires everyone to appear as strong as possible, and this tactic, which may work in other areas, fails miserably when it comes to love. Like most people, Delaney had never considered how his inner world was constructed, but everyone creates psychological divisions as a means of survival. We wall off inner compartments, and into them we shove all the undesirable things about ourselves, our secret fears, weaknesses, and flaws, our deep sense of doubt, our belief that we may be ugly or unlovable. Everyone has these dark chambers of the soul. Do you think you're lovable? I asked Delaney. My God, what a question, he blurted. It's not anything I think about. I just want to get married, you know, like everyone else. That question would take most people aback, I said. But why? Is it embarrassing to feel lovable? The discomfort arises because love can feel too personal, even for ourselves. It pokes into those compartments where our negative self-image is stored. Unfortunately, to fall in love means going there. That's what love demands. True love is more dangerous than most people are willing to admit. It arouses the same discomfort in our dreams where we find ourselves naked in a public place. If falling in love meant going into all the dark chambers of the soul, none of us would risk it. On the other hand, to love another person involves opening up your whole being. What makes the risk possible is the ingredient of spirit. Spirit is the real you, beyond all divisions into good and bad, desirable and undesirable, lovable and unlovable. Love exposes this reality, which is why falling in love is a blessed state. For many people, it is the only one they will know in a lifetime. The spiritual overtones of romantic love are unmistakable. First, there is a tremendous emotional opening, a liberation. Your whole being flows towards your beloved, as if the two of you share the same feelings, the same likes and dislikes, almost the same breath. The secondary effect of this inrush of delight is a release of cares and anxiety. The cloud of infatuation swallows up worries over such trivialities as money, career, and the fate of mankind. Even if you had no spiritual background at all, you would have tasted the soul's sweetness by falling in love. As the great Persian poet Rumi says, when love first tasted the lips of being human, it started singing. This blessing of falling in love comes from spirit, but it can be blocked by ego. Ego is responsible for protecting your self-image. It creates the compartments where everything undesirable about you has been hidden. What blocks love is not the presence of those shadow energies, but the division of the psyche that came about when your ego started building inner walls. Love is a flow, and walls keep the flow out. In spiritual terms, this is the problem of duality. By dividing good from bad, right from wrong, we essentially insist that parts of ourselves are unlovable. Why else would we keep them out of sight? We turn ourselves into packages, exactly the kind Delaney talks about. The package seems to contain only good and worthy things. But if another person ventures to love us, the whole package spills open, and a lot of what it contains isn't so nice. The cruelest consequence of duality is that we believe in the rightness of shutting love out. Being open is equated with being weak. Being closed is equated with being strong. And society reinforces these dualities by reminding us day in and day out that this is not a world where love is safe. As with most people, I don't encounter much love except inside my home. On waking, I see my wife's face beside me, and many mornings I marvel at the ineffable love this sight inspires. Something far more delicate and moving than I can put into words. Yet beside my bed also lies the newspaper I read to get to sleep, and in it is all the hatred anyone could imagine. On every page, I confront the catastrophic failure of love. There is a personal failure in the overwhelming amount of divorce, litigation, the social bitterness we've learned to live with. There is a public failure in the war, street crime, and oppression we all go to bed praying will not strike us. Although no one can say where love went, it is a dangerous sign that we are surrounded by so many images pretending to be love. Every day we are saturated, drowned with images of romance from books and films, bombarded with sex from advertisements, and goaded on all sides to become more attractive in order to win attention from a perfect lover. Delaney was struggling in the swamp of non-love, as we all are, trying to find something he really couldn't name. "What if you sat down and imagined the perfect woman waiting out there for you?" I told him. "You've probably done it many times only to give up. Well, I think you're going to find that woman, and it will happen the instant you can let go of her image. It sounds like a paradox, but letting go has to be the first step in finding someone to love you. Because love is never an image. Love doesn't depend upon external values at all." "I know that," he said with sudden and surprising gentleness. "I felt I had no choice but to have some kind of image in mind. Otherwise, it was like looking in the dark." "Most people have that worry," I said. "It reflects their own secret belief that they are not all that desirable themselves, and also their fear of loneliness. At least they have an image to keep them company. There's a deeper issue here, though. Does love ever come from outside ourselves?" "Of course it does," he said. "Go into it more deeply," I urged. "All of us believe in duality, which creates the perception that people are separate. You and I seem separate sitting here in this room. We have separate bodies, separate minds, separate memories and backgrounds. Separation is the foundation of our whole existence. But part of you hates living in separation. It hates the fear, loneliness, suspicion, and alienation that comes with being totally isolated. This part of you calls upon love to solve its pain. If only you can find someone to love you, perhaps the separation will be healed."
"You don't make my life sound very pretty," Delaney mourned.
"No," I said. "But in their heart of hearts, most people feel the pangs of separation. It's not a secret. Let me ask you, do you really believe there's a perfect somebody out there waiting for you? As common as that myth is, the reality is different. The somebody waiting for you is always a reflection of yourself. Out of our loneliness, all of us seek a source of love that will fill up the lack we feel inside. And that's exactly what happens. No more, no less." "I don't know how to respond to that," Delaney said. "If you observe yourself closely enough," I said, "you'll see the patterns. Most men, for example, feel a lack of tenderness, which they hope to find in a woman. Most women feel a lack of strength, which they hope to find in a man. Whatever the need is, the person who feels it becomes the source of love. The question is, how do we keep this going? Can the person who happens to match our needs continue to make us feel loved? I don't think so. We all have too much hidden inside. There is too much healing to do. So in time, the outside source of love fades. It stops being effective, and then certain truths drawn. You can never receive more love than you are prepared to receive. You cannot give more love than you have to give. The love reflected from another person has its source in your own heart.
The reason love from outside sources stops working is that you haven't solved separation, only papered it over. So then what? He asked. You stand at a crossroads. You can go out again and search for love from some new source. You can make do with what you have, or you can turn to satisfaction other than love, or you can be totally honest and give up the search for externals altogether. Here we had reached a critical point. The path to love begins when you realize that separation, loneliness, and the pain of isolation are real. Not many people want to face this fact, and therefore they resign themselves to a sadly constricted amount of love. As a healer, love knows no limits, but you must be willing to bring your whole being to it. Only then does the balm of love flow. There's something I really admire in you, I told Delaney. You haven't settled for imitations. In some part of yourself, you are waiting for the real thing. Delaney met my eyes. He nodded ever so slightly. It's such a hard thing to talk about, I said. This nameless longing that only love can fill. What are we waiting for? What is the real thing? If not the flood of images about romance, sex, and endless pleasure that the ideal lover is supposed to gift us with. In reality, we are the gift. We are the giver. Duality is and always has been an illusion. There is no one out there waiting for you. There is only you and the love you bring to yourself. In spirit, you are united with all other souls, and the only purpose of separation is for you to rejoin that unity, which makes love the only blessing, Delaney said quietly. We sat for a moment, letting his words sink in, for it was as if he spoke from my heart too. Yes, I said, love is the only blessing, and that means all love. If love is the ultimate reality, as the great teachers tell us, then the slightest gesture of connection is a gesture of love. To reach across the wall of separation, whether to friend, lover, family, or stranger, is to act in the name of love, whether we consciously realize it or not. We had reached a special moment, which we both wanted to appreciate in silence. We had been talking in Delaney's office in suburban Boston, an ordinary room, before a moment not ordinary. The path to love always opens unexpectedly. Our world contains such chaos and confusion that it is a miracle there is a path at all. Yet, as long as there is separation, there will be a bridge. I think you've gotten at one of my secrets, Delaney said after a pause. I had lost faith that anybody out there really would love me as much as I wanted her to. Love doesn't take faith, I said. Because separation is an illusion, believing in it is what takes faith. Love is real. It can be held, nurtured, felt, learned from, and depended on. So abandon your faith. Stop wishing and hoping, and turn your efforts to what is real. Duality is so flimsy that it is ready to fall apart at any moment. In our imaginations, we believe that love is apart from us. Actually, there is nothing but love once we are ready to accept it. You know what I love most about this book is that the book in its entirety is not like one of the best books that I've ever read in my life or anything like that. But there are so many little passages throughout the entire book that are so confronting, like smacks in the face, like, oof. I have so many highlights in this book now. And this is a book that I've had for years, like probably 7 years at this point, that I picked up at Half Price Books years ago. And I'm just now getting to reading it. And I just finished it today, actually. This would have been like a whole week after I recorded the episode. But I recommend this book simply for the fact that you have to sit and read to get to those gems, those beautiful nuggets that I'm talking about, right? Like, this isn't a book where you are instantly going to be pulled in on every single page and feel like this whole book changed my life. But there's going to be those little nuggets in there that you are going to be so grateful that you actually took the time to be with a book to get to. And this first chapter was just what he shared in this passage, in conversation with this person, was so revealing and eye-opening to me. And I love how this book, because Deepak Chopra he's from India. So a lot of he has a very Indian mind, which is like traditionally, you know, what we think of as like yoga philosophy and things like that. So he inserts that in the book, and there are parts of the book that can get really abstract. Like you will get lost and feel like I'm going to close this book. But towards the end of every chapter, he always grounds it down. He doesn't even wait till the end of the chapter every time. Sometimes he will say, I know I just said something super abstract. Let me try to ground it. Let me try to make it practical. But he always grounds it down in like a real life situation or conversation that helps you to understand what he might have said that was a little off, you know, out into space. So this requires, there's some patience required and some like devotion to really getting to the good parts of the book that is required to get through this. But if you have that patience, if you are someone who really does enjoy being with a book just to get to those like highlight moments, this is actually going to be a really good book for you. I really enjoyed it, and I already know this is going to be a book that I reference, and that's why I was so intentional about highlighting, because when I want to open the book and I see the highlights, I know it's going to be something good and nourishing for my soul and to help me keep expanding my perspective of love. What does that look like? How can I be that? And how can I truly come from that place with my beloved, whoever that ends up being or whoever that is? And even within my friendships, you know, how am I showing up as love? How am I opening myself up versus resisting and blocking off love? And when you read the book, you will understand the many different layers of what that word can even mean. Such a good book. So I pray that you enjoyed me reading to you this week, and that you tap the link in the show notes, which is my Amazon storefront. And I would have added the book there by the time that this episode is released, so that you can grab it there. And let these words permeate and sink in. Listen to it again. Let yourself be in rest. Be laying down, you know, the next time that you listen to this episode, if you weren't the first time. And yes, continue to enjoy. I will be playing a curated playlist for you in the next episode, so stay tuned for that. Remember that those episodes are only available on Spotify, so if you are an Apple podcaster, you know, just think about making your way over to Spotify. You can still listen to it even if you don't pay for Spotify. It'll just be, the songs will be abbreviated and you won't get the full experience of the episode. But it's absolutely still available, just only on Spotify. So until we, read with each other again, and until we listen to music with each other again, please take care of yourself. Hydrate. Take care of your lungs, okay, as we move into the late fall and winter season. And make sure you're getting your rest, taking your oil of oregano, okay, you know, drinking your mullein leaf, okay, like really tune into your body to hear what it needs from you to be well this season. And we will talk in the next episode.